How do economists think? It might sound like an only marginally interesting question, but it could be the key to solving some of our most pressing problems, from climate change to global poverty. Here to guide us is Robbie Makri, author of the new book, How to Think Like an Economist, The Great Economists Who Shaped the World and What We Can Learn from Them Today. Robbie teaches at Harriet Watt University in Scotland and has taught economics for over 30 years. He also writes a regular column on economics in The National. Here he is to share his big ideas.
Sitting in a windowless recording studio in Edinburgh, I'm imagining people listening to what I'm saying across North America and expecting me to condense a year's work into 15 minutes. As we get started, my first question is a little exercise for you. Why are you listening to this? I'm going to pause for 3 seconds to let you think about that. Thinking like an economist means that I have assumed that you have chosen to listen to me. No one has sat down with you and told you that you need to listen. You are doing this voluntarily. I will also suggest that since your time is one of your most valuable resources, you must value this opportunity to hear me talk. Of all the alternatives open to you right now, there are none which you would rather be doing. Of course, you might be doing something else as well just now, like driving your car or making your dinner, and concentrating much more on those. Or you might be listening curiously to the start of this talk to work out if there is any point in spending another 12 minutes finding out more about this book. That little exercise has introduced you to the way in which economists consider that the world is filled with resources which need to be managed. Economists explore how people create these resources and also how they manage them, acquire them, and use them. And while economists treat time and money as being very important resources for most people, there's also a long tradition of economists thinking about people as self-managed resources. It could be that you plan to read this book purely for pleasure, but you might also be thinking about reading it because you hope to learn something. In economic terms, as you read, you are making an investment of time and effort. As the book helps you to see the world in a slightly new way, it will cause you to change. For some readers, it may even be the first step in becoming a professional economist, and those readers should expect a substantial return on their investment. Here's a definition then. An economist is what you are left with after all the charisma has been extracted from an accountant. I know, it's a horrifying thought, and it brings us to another question. Are economists really so deeply weird? Do they make the nerds on the Big Bang Theory seem quite ordinary? Think about the activities which are at the heart of economics. Whether it's buying and selling, or using up time and money, or buying machinery and hiring workers, economics is all about prices and quantities. In other words, economics is about numbers. That makes it perfectly natural for professional economists to be very good at using maths to think about the economy, as well as gathering statistics to explore its working. Anyone who has completed even one course in economics any time in the last 75 years since Paul Samuelson wrote his textbook Economics: An Introductory Analysis will have encountered pages littered with diagrams, algebra, graphs, and tables of data. Those books are trying to teach their readers how to be professional economists. Samuelson's predecessor, the great English economist Alfred Marshall, believed passionately that good economic thinking could always be expressed in everyday language. A very capable mathematician, he was sceptical about the value of mathematics in economics. In a piece of famous advice to his pupil, Arthur Bowley, he suggested that economists should use mathematics privately to develop their ideas. Then, after turning those ideas into plain, easily understood prose, they should burn the maths. Marshall worried that mathematics could easily become a barrier, preventing good economic ideas from having any practical effect. Even today, many young professional economists find that an important moment in their training is the realization that they have just come up with a solution to a non-existent problem. Presenting their ideas with youthful enthusiasm, they encounter the response, "So what?" Their logic might be impeccable. They might have used statistical techniques flawlessly. But they have failed to demonstrate that their hard-won knowledge has any social benefits. So thinking like an economist involves plenty of measurement and analysis, but persuasive economics is much more than that. Here's another little pop at economists. At the end of the May Day parade in Moscow, after all the nuclear missiles have passed, imagine that there is a file of men in grey suits. It's the economists' core, the ultimate weapon of mass destruction. Given that working out what is going wrong in the economy and how to put it right has always been an important part of thinking like an economist, why do we tell jokes like these? There was economics long before there were economists, and through the 20th century, many important economic ideas were first developed by non-economists. Other people tend to view economists with suspicion whenever they close in on themselves and hold narrow technical discussions with one another, rather than being outward-looking and explaining how to understand the world better and make it a good place. The jibe is therefore aimed at economists who have forgotten that the economy is too important just to be left to them. We are all immersed in the economy, and everyone tries to understand it to some extent. That makes us all economists. The professionals, who are certainly not infallible, don't get to form a priestly caste. There is another reason, though. People want the economy to work for them. When it doesn't, it's not just economists who have some explaining to do. You probably know that 2024 is a year of many elections. When I recorded this, people in Mexico, South Africa, and India had just voted, and the election campaign in Britain had just started. In November, Americans will choose between Mr. Biden and Mr. Trump. In all these elections, the state of the economy and its prospects are very important. Around the world, many people feel that they have been pummeled by the economy for far too long. Such voters are always ready to turn out the government because it has failed in the important task of making the economy work well for them. To some extent, economists are collateral damage in this. Since they know all about the economy, people want them to take some responsibility when it all goes wrong. But that seems a bit like blaming a police officer investigating the cause of a car accident for letting it happen. For 250 years, economists have been holding up a mirror to society so that people can see what it is that is going wrong. Adam Smith explained in The Wealth of Nations how a capitalist society could work. He criticised the way that the British government ran its colonies, effectively predicting the American Declaration of Independence and the colonists' victory in the subsequent war. Then, in the middle of the 19th century, John Stuart Mill and Karl Marx grappled with the problems of poverty amongst the urban working classes in a time of increasing prosperity. Mill, a liberal, argued for social reforms, especially in education. Marx predicted socialist revolution as the inevitable consequence of the capitalist exploitation he saw everywhere. And during the Great Depression in the 1930s, John Maynard Keynes established a new way of thinking about the economy in which governments had an important management role. Along with many other economists, such as Joseph Schumpeter, Milton Friedman, and Paul Samuelson, these economists succeeded because they were persuasive writers and speakers. That added to their luster and prestige, both as key advisors to governments around the world and as subtle interpreters of events. But now we can have a better definition of an economist. An economist is an expert who will be able to tell you tomorrow why the advice which he gave yesterday about what to do today was wrong. Why do I think that this one is essentially right? It emphasises that economists are better at explanation than at prediction, and that economics can't be like physics because it studies human behaviour and relationships in all their complexity. That's one reason why a book about thinking like an economist includes philosophers, priests, journalists, mathematicians, political scientists, and psychologists. It was essential for the book to begin by demonstrating that in ancient Greek, economics, where the word meant household management, was initially a branch of practical ethics and politics, and that economic ideas mattered to the classical philosophers because they would help people to lead fulfilling lives. That's why Adam Smith rebutted the widely held belief that the wealth of nations lay in a hoard of bullion. He demonstrated that true wealth is to be found in productive assets, including people's knowledge. And as a philosopher, he believed that the good society needed everyone to understand some philosophy. In my writing, I came across many more economists who were immersed in philosophy. I'd expected to find that in the 19th century, economics became separate from philosophy very quickly. It turned out that I was wrong. John Stuart Mill's interests spanned logic, politics, and political economy. Most economists today rely on some form of his utilitarian ethics. Karl Marx can only be understood as a philosopher who criticized Adam Smith's system. He wanted a revolution in economics as a first step towards his socialist revolution. Then I explored the writings of Alfred Marshall, whose Principles of Economics was the standard introduction to economics from the late 19th century until the middle of the 20th century. He argued that the fundamental purpose of economics was to benefit poor working men. Even as he made much of modern economics possible, he adapted the philosophical framework of Smith and Mill. And as for Marshall's great pupil, John Maynard Keynes, was he an economist or was he really a philosopher? Marshall taught him for all of one term. He then wrote a fellowship dissertation on the philosophical foundations of probability theory, which was examined by Bertrand Russell and Alfred North Whitehead. Russell remained a friend for life. Throughout his career, Keynes thought about the economy like a philosopher. That helped him to change the way in which we all think about the economy and to develop a new type of economics which had a much closer relationship with politics than to Marshall's theories. So by the time that great thinkers like Paul Samuelson, John von Neumann and Kenneth Arrow developed sound mathematical foundations for economics, it was perfectly natural that political scientists and psychologists should be developing the ideas which would challenge that approach. Since increasing well-being for people and across society is the whole purpose of economics, good economists need to understand people. Not just as workers and managers or buyers and sellers, but as part of humanity. I have a final jibe. If all the economists were laid end to end, they would not reach a conclusion. Should we be concerned about this? Not at all. When Adam Smith talked about the economy working as if an invisible hand was directing it, he was saying that the economy manages itself. It doesn't need a planner. Instead, we all pursue our own interests. And in doing so, in what Smith considered to be a properly self-interested rather than a selfish way, we reach the best possible economic outcomes. Famously, the 19th century man of letters, Thomas Carlyle, in a defence of slavery, dismissed economics as the dismal science. Believing that abolitionists would make us poorer, Carlyle used the term while denouncing both John Stuart Mill's and Adam Smith's eloquent condemnation of slavery for its immorality and economic inefficiency. For Smith, slavery resulted from the abuse of military and political power. Greedy slave owners were using power to impose their will, extracting huge profits from their corrupt businesses in the colonies. Slavery wasn't the work of the invisible hand, but a result of the hand being bound by the powerful. Rather than being dismal, I'm going to suggest that economics is a messy science. As economists turn to their numbers, they think about how people engage with resources. As they try to understand what is happening around them and how it might change, they must also be, in Robert Heilbronner's phrase, worldly philosophers. Economists tend to be optimists, trusting people to act wisely and believing that society will progress, certainly materially, and perhaps also morally. But they are also realists who know that everything can go wrong. So they call out mistakes and think about how to build a better future. But dealing with people, they are cautious about making predictions, often preferring to explain events after they happen. And in all of this, they bicker happily, disagreeing passionately about how the economy works. Thinking like an economist means looking at the world, seeing it afresh, trying to understand it, and aiming to leave it a better place. This book is the story of how that has happened.
Thank you, Robbie. That was Robbie Mockrey with big ideas from How to Think Like an Economist, the great economists who shaped the world and what we can learn from them today. Also check out our book bite for The Tragic Science, How Economists Cause Harm, Even as They Aspire to Do Good by George DeMartino. I'm Michael Kovnat. Have a great day.